Hello and welcome, everybody. My name is Ryan.
And I'm Heather.
And we're here at the Confidence Through Cabaret podcast. And today we are super excited to be welcoming a really incredible multidisciplinary coach who specializes in everything from EFT to resilience toolkits, the wonderful Anne Diamond. Hi, Anne. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm really happy to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you for joining
us.
It's
such a pleasure. It's such a pleasure. I mean, we have so much to cover.
We want
to hear all about you, but we also want to hear all about your work and how to connect with that. And you just have such a range in your toolkit. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I've spent a lot of time developing it, to be fair. But I've tried and hone it down now and try and share that with my clients and with as many people as possible, because I don't want people to go through all the burnout cycles that I've been through. So I'm trying to help as many people as possible, really.
Right. And so talk us through a little bit about this. So you specialize with, there's a number of things that you specialize in, but EFT is one of the first ones.
Yeah.
How did you get into EFT and how would you describe your practice of it? Because some people might not quite know, you know, what is EFT? I recently had a very different idea of what EFT was and got very confused.
Okay.
We'll go into in a bit.
Yeah, acronyms aren't good, are they? EFT is emotional freedom technique, and the key there is emotional freedom. So it's a gentle mind-body practice, and it's been described as acupuncture without the needles.
Right.
So it uses the same meridian points as acupuncture has, which have obviously been established for many thousands of years in Eastern medicine, and people understand what they are. Mm-hmm. And instead of putting needles in, we gently tap on those acupressure points, normally around the on the side of the hand and around the face and the upper body. So it's a simple little routine, but there are many other points. And we use that to calm our stress response whilst we're talking about the issues we're trying to clear.
Right.
So it could be a phobia, or it could be anxiety, or it could be a past memory, or it could be a feeling. It's just tapping into how we're feeling and accepting how we're feeling. And that's the key, is getting people to accept how they feel about the issue before they start trying to clear it.
Right.
There's a whole load of neuroscience about people being who've been traumatized, who get trapped in the stress response cycle.
Right.
And it's a way of helping them process that to get out of it.
Right, I see. What was it that drew you to this work initially? What made you kind of go, right, you know, this is something I want to explore? How did you come across it all?
I guess, like many people, I've tried many, many things. I just want to be upfront now. I was diagnosed with PTSD not till I was 38, and so I'd had 20 years of since leaving home after trauma when I was a child to try and process what happened. But I'd had various different methods, you know, counselling, different types of talking therapies, mindfulness, tried all those things.
Yeah.
And I was still suffering from depression and various different cycles. And a friend was training as a practitioner. And, you know, I'm always up for a freebie.
Right.
So he wanted me to be one of his case studies. So I thought, yeah, I'll give it a go. Because I tried mindfulness, I tried meditation, I tried yoga, I tried lots and lots of different things, all which are very good for you. And at the time, I was in a very stressful stage of my life, because I'd lived for nearly 20 years in Edinburgh, which was a beautiful city. I loved Edinburgh. And my husband is from Glastonbury, where I'm located now.
Right.
And unfortunately, his mother became was diagnosed with cancer. And so we had to literally give up everything in Scotland, leave everything behind, transport a whole family down to Somerset. And I was in a very difficult stage at that time. Not sure where I was going to be living.
Yeah.
Dealing with all the other stuff going on, terminal illness, all the other stuff. And I needed something. I needed something to support me at that point.
Right.
And I thought, well, nothing to lose, let's do it.
Yeah.
And I came out of that session, the first session with my friend James, and the house thing was the big issue that I wanted to deal with. I came out of that session, went to the estate agents, picked up 6 brochures for houses. This was in the January.
Yeah.
And by June, we moved into our current house.
Wow.
And it's just, you know, it's clearing those blocks to actually it's tapping into your subconscious, you know, what ifs.
Yeah.
The what ifs or the buts that you think, oh, I can't do that, or and it's clearing that, and it's like, right, I'll just do it.
Right.
Yeah, and our mind and body are so connected, and I think a lot of times people underestimate how what we create in our mind manifests in our body, and vice versa. So things like EFT are a fantastic way of kind of connecting the mind and body together to create that alignment and unblock things. So I love that you're doing that. Mm-hmm. What else do you do in your practice? Because I know there's a range of toolkits in your toolkit that we talked about already.
Well, EFT is a tool. It can be self-applied. So once you know what you're doing and it's safe, you can use it for anything, really. But also, obviously, as a practitioner, I use it with clients. But I also...
I'm just going to let you know at this point that that the reason that Heather might be smiling at this present stage a lot is because when I first heard about EFT, I thought it was like a form of massage administered by somebody.
Oh no, it's self-applied. So
this one was planning to just tap me regularly.
You can tap on clients with their permission, but it's they tap on themselves. You only tap on them if they are so traumatized that you have to tap to calm them down. So no, it's all above board. It's okay.
It's okay. And it wasn't the, because I don't believe in stupid questions. I love any question. If you don't know, you got to find out, right?
Yeah.
But it was the fact that I was loving the idea of being able to just randomly tap on Ryan.
Yeah.
I was helping him. So I thank you, Anne, because you have internally given me permission to tap Ryan now.
You can tap him. Other things in the resilience toolkit, I mentioned a few of them. That acceptance is the key, really. One of the first things is acceptance. And when we do EFT, the first thing we do is tap into how we're feeling and say, even though I'm feeling like this, we change this phrase, I deeply and completely accept myself. And then we can say, forgive myself or honor my how I feel, whatever the client's comfortable with. And the really interesting thing I find is some people find it really hard to say, I accept myself, love myself and forgive myself. And when they can't say that, you know, you need to go and investigate that. Because that is a big thing, that I am enough or I accept myself is something that quite a lot of people find very challenging.
Yeah.
So that first sentence sometimes tells me quite a lot about the client without them even telling me what their issue is.
Right.
Yeah. And then is it that point when you sort of say, let's hang on to EFT for the minute and go into other alternative things in the toolkit?
Well, it depends why the client came to see me, because I offer a various range of services. So if they've come to see me specifically about EFT, that'd be fine. But if they came to me for one of my power hour or longer Find Your Spark sort of burnout packages, right. I would first of all get them to address their whole person, whole life, to see where they are right now, because burnout is by definition a work-related issue. And a lot of people think they're a failure because they feel burnt out, but actually it's to do with their work. And I try, and once I get them to think about that, they think, oh, actually it's not me, it's a situation I'm in with my work. And just disassociating yourself from that actually takes the pressure off people so much. And they can start unraveling that massive, how do I sort this out, you know. So then we work through how they manage their energy. You know, what gives them energy, what drains them of energy, and just get them to do an energy audit. Right. So I like it to a bank account.
Right.
So you start the day with £100 in your energy bank account. What tasks or activities do you do during the day that add to your bank account or take away? And at the end of the day, are you overdrawn or are you in credit? And then we look at what takes energy away from them. And say, why is it taking energy away from you? Is it stress related? Or is it physical? So if it's stress related, then we can go into your stress triggers. And I've got a Tame Your Stress Triggers workbook that people can download. I'll send you the link. And it's just about getting them to identify what triggers them, because the biggest thing, you talked about your body storing stress. We generate cortisol, these stress hormones, every time we get stressed. So if we can stop that, we can stop a whole load of other physical and mental health issues.
Right.
Yeah.
We're in control. We're in control of that. Nobody else is. We're the ones that generate all that stuff in our head.
Right.
So cortisol, that, you know, the stress hormone, it leaves our body quickly if it's just on a, it depends obviously on what the situation is, but in an instant it leaves our body quickly unless we hang on to it and associate it with other things that have happened in our life. You know, oh, that's like this, and that's this happening again, and then it's a repetition of thoughts, is my understanding. How do you break that, or how do you suggest people break that routine of almost holding on to the cortisol and creating more of it by going, oh, this is happening again, this always happens to me, this is how, you know, and associating, yeah, creating this really big thing over something quite small by the look somebody gave you or didn't say good morning, or I don't know, something that you found triggering. But how do you stop that cycle so that we don't just keep having these recurring negative thoughts?
That's a very interesting question. All the talks that people do on stress talk about the gazelle that's run away from the lion, and you know, we have this fight, flight or freeze response when we're triggered or threatened, and the gazelle will play dead, so the lion might lose interest. Once the lion's gone away, the gazelle stands up and just starts shaking, like physically shaking, like because it's having a fit. And that's the processing the cortisol. Yeah. And there's a brilliant book called Burnout by the Nagoski sisters I just read. And they talk about this because a lot of us are stuck in this stress cycle. We're stuck in this, oh, somebody did this to me ages ago and I can't forgive them for it. Or he just cut me up and I'm going to get really angry about it. And then you go and tell somebody else and then that triggers you again. You know, you're constantly, it's like the second arrow they call in Buddhism, isn't it? You get wounded by something. And then you injure yourself again because you keep opening the wound. Yeah.
Right.
So it's about recognizing that's happened, accepting it, and then working out a way, either physically or mentally, to just say, right, okay, I've left that one go now. So cabaret, you're talking about cabaret. Lots of people use music, they use dance. Physical activity can actually help you process it. Having a good cry. Because the tears, your tears, that's how you shed cortisol.
Yeah.
So it comes out. And that's, crying's brilliant. Everyone's, you know, don't stress about crying. Just cry. If you want to cry, just cry. Have your wallow time, as they call it. There's a book called Sumo, Shut Up, Move On. And that's a brilliant book. And he talks about having wallow time because, you know, we all suffer at some point. So do your wallowing and then process it, let it go, move on.
Right.
Interesting, because my instant response was, because I didn't cry for almost all of my adult life. I just didn't feel, it just didn't come up. I couldn't do it. It didn't happen. And it's interesting because when you said wallow time, I was like, yeah, I come out of wallow time and then I feel worse because I beat myself up for all the time. I'm just wasting.
I was listening, there's a webinar, I do a lot of learning. I continuously learn and grow. That's what I do. Our brain, when we've been traumatized, I was just this last night, our brain is so creative and adaptive. We regenerate new neural networks. Our brain works in networks rather than they say that this area does this. Everything's connected. So if you've got a memory of a pain, it's not only physical pain. It's not only the physical pain that you get, but you associate that with lots of other things. So like you said, oh, I've done this again, I'm so stupid. Well, all those added things are extra little bits that are added onto that initial pain. So it's trying to disconnect those bits from the initial pain. So you're tuning down, and that's going back to EFT. We tune down the emotional response to that pain. So it doesn't make the pain event hasn't gone away, but your emotional response to it has.
Right.
Beautiful.
And one of the things I found really interesting is you were talking about a burnout specifically, and I think a burnout, I think, has been heightened by the recent lockdowns that we've seen from the pandemic. How do you think people have reacted with regards to that? Do you think it's highlighted burnout as a problem, or do you think it's just increased it?
In my experience speaking to, I was a health and safety professional. Well, I still am, I suppose. I was a health and safety professional for nearly 20 years, and I still have contact with lots of those. And they've particularly felt it this year because they've had the extra burden of trying to keep everybody safe and do everything. I think we go into freeze mode because until we get out of the situation that we're in, because the extra work, the longer hours, the complete change of routine, you know, it's like a grief, isn't it? We've lost that sort of what we know, what's familiar to us. And a lot of us have lost our routines. We've lost the barriers between home and work, working from home. So, you know, we can't just leave the workplace and go home and forget about work because the laptop's in the corner. You know, we're still working, aren't we? So it's about getting boundaries set in place and actually allowing yourself to rest, because we don't switch off. Yeah, I'm the same. I'm guilty. I try to practice what I preach sometimes, but not all the time. You know, I'm still working until 10, 11 o'clock at night, check my social media and emails.
And you're my new best friend.
Oh, okay.
I do that, and Ryan gives me so much grief, but we've established that I am an A-type personality. That means that I measure things by how much I'm getting done, and I never get enough done. And Ryan is not.
Yeah.
So he is much healthier about these things. So I live by setting fires for myself, and then I also set fires for Ryan.
Well, that's the yin yang, you see. You're the yin yang. You have to have that in a good working relationship. You have to have the yin to the yang, you see?
Yes, exactly. So this is
there's
always going to be someone saying, don't send that, it's 10:30 at night.
I'm going to go play some music for a bit. I've had enough of work today. That's my husband. I've been my husband for nearly 30 years, and he's a musician, he's a songwriter. He'll just go out to his studio and just sit there for hours, and I'll be like, well, the dinner needs cooking and the washing up needs doing, and he'll be like, oh, I'll get done later. And I'm like, okay, that's our complete yin yang. He does it. He does the washing up, but he does it later. His tolerance for that is low, is higher than mine, you see. I need to get it out of the way. Whereas he'll be like, oh, I'll get done later. And he does, but just when he feels like it, after he's done his fun things, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so but here's the thing. Okay, so so we set this thing up this week where I would finish work at 7:30 in the evening. So at just before 7:30, I start a whole bunch of new topics. So technically, I am not still working after 7:30. I've just given Ryan a whole bunch of stuff to respond to. So after 8 o'clock, he's then responding. So, but here's my question though, Anne. Okay, so I
sense I'm going to get in trouble here, whatever I say.
this is counseling for couples, right? I mean, we're not a traditional couple, but we're
really what's happening right now. I'm so sorry, Anne.
I feel these worms creeping out the can here. I'm just going to see him. Okay.
Okay.
Oh my God.
So here's the thing. Okay, so I'm like you are. I need to get that done first before I can relax. But then I never get it all done, because as soon as the dishes are done or the whatever is all the things that have to be done, get done, then there's more stuff. And then my mind goes, but you could just do this one little email. And then you could just put this one thing up on social media and so on. Yeah. And then it's 10, 11 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning. So I never get done with that list. So what you're saying is, your husband goes and does his relaxing time and then gets stuff done. You get stuff done and then you have relaxed time. What if you don't have the
relaxed time? Well, probably I would get people to reframe this, because relaxed time is seen by some people as wasting time or not important. But if you see it as, if you've got 24 hours in the day,
okay,
and to keep your brain functioning healthily and well, keep you well, you need between 6 and 9 hours sleep a day, don't you? You need. So do you schedule that into your day?
I absolutely do. I absolutely do. I make sure that I have at least 8 hours of rest time.
Okay. So to be able to sleep properly, and I'm not a sleep expert, I'll put the disclaimer in there, but to be able to sleep properly, you have to have some clear space between active tasks like scrolling and social media and bedtime. So a lot of people have a bedtime routine. They'll switch screens off at a certain time and then do some mindful activity even. you can call it mindless and mindful, but that could be either watching TV, or it could be reading a book, or it could be doing a hobby, whatever you want to, you know, do before bedtime. So your brain switches state from active to rest.
Okay.
So it's having that little gap in between, isn't it, between doing stuff and bedtime.
So how do you then, so we're talking about resilience toolkits, which I know is a part of your work. How do you, it's not your job to convince somebody, so that's the wrong word, but how do you encourage someone to see that downtime is not a waste?
Interesting question that I use a lot in both EFT and in my resilience coaching is, what is it costing you not to do it?
Well, nothing, because I like it.
But in the long term, what is it costing you if you don't give yourself that rest and recharge time? So what would burnout cost you if you did burn out?
Yeah. And I think 2020 kind of took care of some of that, because a lot of us got downtime that we needed and never would have taken until we got to the point where some sort of, you know, usually in my experiences, in my family anyways, our bodies that shut down first, you know, and then that forces that rest. But I'll give you an example. So last night I switched off, admittedly not at 7:30, but still. And I went onto a webinar, which I loved, which was all about, you know, kind of effectively positive psychology and you know, looking at choice of happiness being a choice.
Is that an Action for Happiness one?
It wasn't actually.
Oh.
It wasn't. It was very cool. I went into it for my own, because self-development is a valid way of spending relaxation time. But then I get involved in listening to the other delegates' stories and input, and I start going, oh, I could do something on that with it. And then it instantly changes to work life.
So that was your creative brain kicking into action with lots of ideas of things you could do, was it?
Yeah, absolutely. And then I have a debrief in the morning where I say, okay, Ryan, here are nine more things. Oh, here, lost my light. Here are nine more things that we're doing in Confidence Through Cabaret. So, and then that says to me that I wasn't fully relaxing, and that's an issue. So how do you get past that bit? Or how do you, what's in the toolkit that you would encourage somebody? Because you're talking about burnout. It's easier said than done. Everybody seems to understand burnout, although think that it's not going to happen to them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, were you relaxed when you were doing that? Did you just make a mental note, or did you write it down? You know, a lot of times people just write things down and pick it up again in the morning. You know, so you've written it down, and you basically say, right, I've done my work for the day. I'm now allowing myself to rest. And, you know, there are various different apps or meditations or things you could do to switch your brain state. There's music and that you can listen to. So lots of different ways you can actually actively switch yourself from the active doing mode to your rest mode.
Brilliant. So you help your clients by figuring out what they need to put in their toolkit? Is that,
there's no point in me telling people what to have in their toolkit, because different things work for different people. So my job as a coach is to suggest different tools and see which one works best for them. And they might come up with their own tools, because the skill of a coach is to ask the right questions to get the clients to come up with the answers themselves, because nobody does things unless they really want to. So the change is hard, you know, change is difficult, and it's sometimes easier to go with the current situation and accept that they're not happy than actually make change and grow, because we're going outside their comfort zone, aren't we? The comfort zone is what's familiar to us right now. And to make those decisions and take, for some people, the decisions could be quite serious, life-changing decisions, but actually in the long term, because I help them set like their North Star, so what they're actually trying to get to long term, actually they need to make these serious changes right now to get to where they want to be in whatever time scale they're looking at.
Nice. Sorry, I'm just going to move my laptop a little bit here, but that's so okay. So everybody goes through and through the various tools that you take them through, or that they can come up with. And then they create the resilience toolkit. And then what's the next part of that process that in your work that you do with them?
Well, it's accountability. So it's basically setting accountability targets. So either they task me to check in with them at certain time frames, or I encourage them to find an accountability buddy, like you've got Ryan. You know, you and Ryan are accountable, so you get Ryan to help you. Or I've got a Beat Burnout support group on Facebook, which people could join. So there's a community I'm trying to build where I'm trying to get people to help each other, because I don't know all the answers. You know, lots of other people have experienced it and they maybe have something that they're more in tune to. So it's about getting people to share these tips and tools and grow together, because I'm a firm believer that your light can be used to light many other candles, but your light doesn't shine brighter, does it? Less brightly. So helping other people to grow and lift them, you're actually helping yourself too.
Nice. So that's a wonderful group that you've started.
Yeah.
Really wonderful, because I think we're more likely to stick to things when we're not alone.
Yes.
You know, like exercise. Yeah. We were literally just talking about that this morning, about, you know, how we continue to exercise, you know, this far into lockdown where we're alone. It's okay doing that for a while, but it does wear thin. And I think, you know, people need a community where others can understand, where they can be accepted, to be honest. And I think it's just so beautiful that you've started that community, as well as, you know, doing the individual one-to-one work.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to make sure that everybody had the opportunity to, because obviously not everyone can afford to pay for coaching, but they can have the opportunity to join the community and still benefit from the tips and things as well. I set up a group before lockdown. I set up a group for self-employed mums, because I live in Somerset, which is quite a rural community. And what we found was that we were very isolated as self-employed mums, you know, balancing families and our businesses as well. And that's been so amazing. So I thought, well, it'd be good to do a similar thing for people who are experiencing burnout, because that might not necessarily be mums, if you see what I mean. So
yeah.
I thought I'd try and do a separate group.
Sure. Okay, so we have EFT, and you have your resilience toolkit and your coaching practice and your Facebook community.
Yeah.
Have we missed anything?
Well, I'm an artist. I'm an artist. I hit a big significant birthday this year. I will be later on this year. And for my last significant birthday, I did the New York Marathon for Walk the Walk. So I walked the New York Marathon in my bra, that which was amazing. I decided a couple of years ago when I was really Swithering, I was making some big life changes, because I was trying to balance my old health and safety work with my new life down in Somerset, and it wasn't working because I couldn't commute as well as I could, as I did in Edinburgh, you know. So I had a big coaching client who was based in Cambridge, and I was commuting from Glastonbury to Cambridge to go and see this consultancy client, and it was just so stressful. And they basically pulled the contract for their reasons, not for mine. And I thought, what am I going to do now? I've got no, all my main projects is gone, you know, a bit like a lot of people last year in COVID. So I thought, I've been doing art to help my mental health since I'd had a period of illness 8 years ago. And I thought, I'm going to go back to college and do an art foundation, because why not? So I've been studying art for the last 2 years, and I've loved it because it's freed me up so much. When you work in health and safety, you're have to get it right, you're not allowed to make mistakes, and you're checking other people for mistakes all the time, because if anyone makes a mistake, you know, that's wrong. When you're an artist, we celebrate our mistakes. You know, Bob Ross's happy little accidents. Within the first week of college, after being, I would inspect colleges and university, biological safety officer at Durham University 3 years ago, like covering the whole university. Within a week of starting college, I was dressed up in a cardboard outfit. It was a hybrid elephant albatross pangolin. We made it ourselves, entirely out of cardboard, and I was the model. I was walking on tables, catwalk. I couldn't see a thing.
That's great.
I was thinking, oh my gosh, what am I doing? But I love it.
I'm so into this.
It was great. And with the acting work I've done as well and the music, you just get so serious doing this health and safety stuff. I thought, no, I'm going to enjoy myself. And I decided I wanted to work with people. EMR into the EFT and to the stress management coaching. I'm just doing what I love now, so it's brilliant.
Well, that's wonderful.
How does your we'll say stage life, your art, how does that inform your confidence?
Well, again, you're not afraid to make mistakes, and actually you like your play, it's creative. Toolkit, it's playing more, you know. It's I'm doing a project on creating recovery at college right now. I'm trying to get people's experience of being creative and trying to capture that in an art project. So that's really interesting, because as adults we don't play. We play all the time when we're kids, and that is one of the best ways of calming your mind down. I mean, how many times have you had a brilliant idea when you've been sitting doodling or when you're in the shower doing nothing? That's when we get our big ideas. And we get so focused on the doing mode rather than just being and just playing, you know?
Yeah.
You know, we just get a cup of coffee and we paint with it, or we'll get a bit of paper, or even more precious. Now, as an artist, I started out as an artist learning how to paint, as in copying things, like painting a flower or painting something. But now I could paint something and I think, oh, I'm just going to rip that up for a collage. That takes a lot of confidence, because you wouldn't want to rip up your precious creation just to put in a collage, you know? But lose attachment. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. I'm watching Ryan's reaction, because Ryan is an amazing artist in many senses. No, let's do this. So Ryan self-produced and released his own album in 2020. He's a drag and cabaret artist and burlesque artist. And he sings amazingly in his shows, but he also draws. And when you said, rip up your art, I saw
triggered you.
A little bit.
I fully have a reaction to that, but at the same time I've been trying to do something similar myself recently, and not to be as precious with sketches and things like that, and then just to take things that work and elements that work and put them into different places. So yeah, I totally get where you're going with that, but it does still have that reaction in me of going,
yeah, it is quite hard. What I did, because I do music as well. My husband writes songs. We've done about four albums. That only started literally when we had this big life change with my mother-in-law being diagnosed with the cancer. My husband had started songwriting in the shed with his friend, and because we were moving 500 miles away, his friend, you got to record this, so they recorded it, and the guys I recorded it with added a bit of percussion, because it was just the two of them on guitars. And right. I came into the kitchen when they were listening to their first demo of this CD. And it was my birthday and I'd had a couple of drinks. So I was a bit, you know.
You're merry.
I was a bit merry. And they went, oh, Anne, this guy's put tambourine on this track. Can you play tambourine? I went, no idea. So I went and got one of the kids, you know, these early learning centres tambourines.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I found one of those in the toy box in the lounge, because the kids were little then. And I tapped along to the song and they went, oh, I regret you're in the band. I'm like, okay. So that was my audition. And my first gig, this is a confidence thing as well. My first gig was... I had to travel to Manchester for a safety conference that I was on the committee chairing.
Right.
I got off the train. I was and this one of the people hadn't turned up. So I'd literally got off the train. They went, right, Anne, you're chairing this session now. Right. Okay. So I walked into the conference with 10 minutes notice to chair this session. That was nerve wracking enough. You know, I did that. I got through that. It's fine. Got the train home. Hopped off the train. Went to play my first gig. Playing the first gig was more nerve-wracking than chairing a conference.
Funny, yeah.
And it was in a little smoky little bar in Edinburgh. Well, not smoky, but you know, a little cellar bar in Edinburgh. And there were just the three of us with the microphones, and I had my tambourine. I could barely remember the lyrics, and they had a magic hat, and we got paid. And I'm like, oh my God, I've just got paid for my first gig. It's only about 10 quid each, but it's like, I just got paid for my first gig. It was amazing.
First time you get money for doing art, you're just like,
thing. And we've gone from that to, well, we play regularly at festivals now. We've released two or three albums, four albums. And I do the artwork for the album. So it's
amazing.
So, you know.
Oh, that's so cool.
That is so cool.
Yeah. So it's great. And it's a social thing with my husband, because we've been together for 30 years. And, you know, you do run out of things to talk to after that long, right, don't you? Right. So, but no, we perform gigs together now. It's our social life. We go off.
Oh, that's so cool.
That is so much fun.
Oh, I love that.
So this will be easy for you to answer, partly because you've heard our podcast and partly because of your range of experience. Mm-hmm. If you were going on stage to perform cabaret, one prop would you want to have with you?
Oh, interesting. Well, it'd have to be a washboard.
Okay.
Oh, there we go, yeah.
Because that can cover up a multitude of sins. So if you have a bit of a costume malfunction, it's okay because you've got your cover in. And you can make a noise with it. And actually, the amount of reaction, the reaction I get to the washboard, because it's still quite an unusual thing for a woman to play a washboard.
Right.
It is quite a good talking point.
Amazing. And what's your stage name for your cabaret with washboard?
Well, I'm in two bands. The main band I'm in is called John D. Revelator. So I'm Annie D. Revelator.
Ah, I like that.
And that's we're the Revelators. So
So your solo artist name would be?
Oh, it'd be Annie D. Revelator. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And one last question for me. What would you say is your favorite lesson that you've learned in all of your journey?
Well, it's got to be I am enough.
Right. I like that.
Because the PTSD was a result of years and years of being told to go away or being rejected and neglected and sort of mostly psychological abuse at home. And then not fitting in, not feeling like you fitted in, because feeling between two families and all the other stuff that went on at home. And then, you know, throughout your teens and 20s, you don't really know or feel confident in yourself, but that I am enough is enough in any situation. So it affects imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
You know, it affects your self-criticism. And actually it affects you being able to go out there and do new things, to say I'm enough. It's okay, I'm good enough, I can do it. Mm-hmm. If I make a mistake, it's not a problem.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Well, I have just one more question for you.
Okay.
Just taking a moment to take a breath. but I would like to know, where can we find you?
Oh, I'm everywhere. The Creative Leader EFT is on Facebook, because that's the only place I've put it so far. My resilience coaching is at worksafeandwell.co.uk, and I'm also on Facebook. And the art is And I'm an Artist. So I'm on Instagram as Anna's Arts Things.
Amazing. Oh. And we'll put all of the links with this as well. And I'd love it if you shared your stress, your stressors worksheet as well.
Yeah, the Tamey Triggers. Yeah, I'll share that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that people can really kind of, you know, get to know your work and find you and, you know, get involved in whatever way they think is most what they need. So it's been beautiful having you here. Thank you really so much.
Thank you.
It's been lovely to chat. It's been great. I love to see your drawings, Ryan. I need to see your drawings. I like to share other artists' work. So.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, but I'd love to hear your albums. I want to see your stuff and hear it. That's amazing.
We're on Spotify and Bandcamp.
Yeah. Oh, perfect. Yes. Same. Oh, amazing. Great. Oh, we'll have to do an artistry hookup. That'll be wonderful. Oh, exciting.
Yeah, I did actually dress up as a nun for one of our videos, which is very interesting.
Love that.
Walking around an industrial estate in a nun's outfit on a Sunday afternoon, all the drivers looking at me going, what the heck is she doing?
But, sounds like a great day. Sounds like my day in paradise.
It sounds like Ryan's typical weekend.
Yeah. It's just how I get to work. Oh my goodness, thank you so much for joining us, Anna. It's been such a pleasure to have you. And this has been the Confidence Through Cabaret podcast. We have had an amazing time today. We hope everybody has been listening and enjoying it. Please make sure you go and check out Anne and her practices online through the links that we provide. Check the bio. My name has been Ryan.
And I am still Heather.
I think I'm still Anne.
Yes.
And this has been Confidence Through Cabaret, the podcast. And don't forget that it is your body,
your world, your stage.
Thank you so much, everybody. Goodbye.